Hello, I'm Sherry House, a missionary living in Thailand who loves to study the lives of great women of whom it can be said, she hath done what she could. Welcome to Silhouettes, my weekly story about a lady whose life challenges, encourages, and teaches me. I hope as you listen today, your heart will be encouraged and challenged too, to do what you can for the Lord. So grab a cup of tea, sit back and enjoy. Let me tell you her story. Emily Bletchley was born in England around 1842. Not much is known of Emily's childhood, except that she had several siblings and that she lost her mother at some point before her early 20s. Emily trained to be a teacher at the Home and Colonial Training College, where her best friend Jenny Faulding also attended classes. In January of 1865, Emily and Jenny started attending the Saturday prayer meetings for the China Inland Mission, led by Hudson Taylor. Both ladies had read Taylor's book, China's Spiritual Need and Claims, and were greatly moved by it. By Emily's graduation that summer, Hudson and Maria Taylor asked her if she would join their family as Taylor's secretary and governess to their two oldest children, with the intent of traveling with them to China. Emily proved herself to be an efficient secretary, and Hudson Taylor began to rely heavily on her, handing over many important tasks as they prepared for the upcoming mission endeavor. She was considered part of the family and did her best to serve the Taylors in any way she could. Having lost her mother at such a young age made Emily appreciate all the more being loved by the Taylors and included as part of their family. She was looking forward to their soon departure to go to China. Before they left, Emily's brother died from tuberculosis. This nearly broke her heart and almost derailed her plans, but the following year, in May of 1866, she was on the boat with the Taylors, their four children, her best friend Jenny, and 14 other missionaries headed to China. Emily displayed a calmness that affected her fellow missionaries when they all nearly died from two different typhoons that hit their ship during the four-month journey. She was a prayer warrior and focused on caring for the needs of others before her own. When they arrived in China, Emily happily accepted Hudson Taylor's revolutionary ideas for their mission objectives and didn't mind wearing traditional Chinese clothing. Hudson Taylor led the team to set up their first mission in the city of Hangzhou. Emily continued as the governess for the four Taylor children, Grace, Herbert, Frederick, and Samuel. She taught them their daily school lessons, which freed up Maria Taylor for ministry work with her husband. So integrated was Emily in the Taylor family that Maria and Hudson thought of her as a younger sister and often called her Ai Mei, which means beloved little sister in Chinese. She was right by Maria's side nursing young Grace when she was dying from meningitis that first year. A month after Grace died, Emily saved little Freddie from death when the mosquito net he was sleeping under caught on fire. And on at least two occasions, Emily nursed Maria back from the brink of death. Emily's duties were not relegated just to helping the Taylors. She was intricately involved in reaching the Chinese as well. She was a faithful witness and spent countless hours helping the sick who came to the mission station for medical needs. In April 1868, Hudson Taylor wanted to open a mission station further inland in Suzhou. Not everyone agreed, but Maria did, and so they went. And where the Taylors went, Emily went with enthusiasm. Her only sorrow being that Jenny, her best friend, would stay behind in Hangzhou to continue on the mission work there. The mission in Suzhou failed after only 2 months because of local hostilities. For the next 2 months, they lived on boats waiting for the Lord's leading. It was decided they would try to open a mission station in Yangzhou. They moved into the new premises on July 20th. The small party were aware of the dangers that faced them, but they were trusting God to let them do a work in this area. Emily marked the event in her Bible next to 2 Samuel 24:24, which says, "Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing." Shortly after they arrived, all three Taylor children came down with smallpox, and Samuel, who was 4 at the time, developed bronchopneumonia. Emily also received word that another one of her brothers had passed away, leaving just her two younger sisters and her father. These events were cause for sadness, but Emily was not deterred in her determination to help reach the Chinese people. 1 month after setting up the mission in Yangzhou, a riot broke out. The men ran for help while the women tried to hold off the violent mob. Several men tore at Maria and Emily's clothes, trying to steal whatever money or possessions they might have had on them. The women and children sought refuge in the upstairs rooms. Then they heard shouts that the house had been set on fire. The ladies lowered the children out of the window using bedsheets for a rope. The children made it down, but the rioters burned the makeshift rope before Maria and Emily could escape. Emily and Maria, who was 6 months pregnant, jumped from the second floor window. Both suffered permanent injuries but escaped with their lives. 4 days later, as they fled across the Yangtze River, Emily made this journal entry. "We have not yet had time to change our blood-stained clothes. Very earnestly do I desire and plead that God will yet take us back to that city for His glory's sake." They did just that and returned to their house on November 23rd, 3 months later. They went on to see great success at that mission station, with many villagers coming to know the God of these foreigners who came back even after they had been so viciously attacked. In 1870, just 4 years after they first arrived, the Taylors made the difficult decision that their older 4 surviving children must return to England for health reasons. Charles, who was just a baby, would stay with them in China. So great was Maria's love for and confidence in Emily that she asked her if she would be willing to take the children home and care for them. Emily herself was suffering with advanced tuberculosis, and a change of climate might be good for her. It pained her to leave the work in China and to leave the Taylors, knowing Maria was pregnant again and so very ill, but she loved the children so and had peace that it was the Lord's will. Before they left on their voyage, Samuel, who was 5 at the time, passed away. When Emily traveled home to England with the Taylor children, Maria sent this note to Hudson Taylor's mother. "Receive her as a daughter for our sake to begin with, but soon you will continue to do so for her own sake, and call her Emily, and not Miss Blatchley. In leaving us, she is leaving home, for she has been to us as a daughter and a sister both in one." Soon after Emily arrived home, she received word that both Maria and her baby had died shortly after childbirth. The news devastated Emily. Her dear friend and ministry partner were gone. Emily soldiered on, caring for Maria's children as if they were her own. The following year, Emily's failing health, the needs of his children, and the needs of the mission board, combined with his own broken health, required Hudson Taylor to return to England for a break. Many assumed he would marry Emily, who had been caring diligently for his children for so many years. On the voyage home, though, Hudson Taylor rekindled his friendship with Jenny Faulding, who also happened to be traveling on the same ship, and before they arrived home, they were engaged. The couple sent word to Emily from the ship about their engagement. Although Emily had never spoken of it openly, she had written in her journal that she thought she might be the next Mrs. Taylor. Emily sent her congratulations back to the couple, but secretly she suffered intense grief. She wrote in her journal, "Even so, Father, for it seemed good in thy sight." Once home, Hudson Taylor secured a house for Emily, the children, and his mother. After the wedding, Jenny joined the household. By that time, Emily's grief had turned to contentment. She was happy to be part of a family again. Hudson Taylor and Jenny returned to China the following year, leaving Emily to care for the children in England. Besides caring for the children, Emily became the acting director for the China Inland Mission in Taylor's place. She wrote thousands of letters, kept the mission's accounts, published and distributed the Occasional Papers, which was a publication informing people of the ongoing work in China and the China Inland Mission's future plans. Hudson Taylor commented on more than one occasion that the mission in those fledgling years would never have made it had it not been for Emily's ability, diligence, and faithfulness. On July 25, 1874, Emily Blatchley passed from this life to the next, where her body was made whole, and she saw her Savior face to face, and she was reunited with her dear friend Maria. Well, you can find out more about Emily Blatchley on my website, sherryhouse.com, but let me tell you one more story from her life that resonated with one of my own. If you do any research of your own on Emily Blatchley, one of the first things you will read is that she was a beloved friend of the Taylor family. Whether you disagree with the Taylors giving up their parenting of their children to another, the fact of the matter remains that they did, for the most part, put the responsibility of their children on the shoulders of Emily. Maria Taylor had confidence in the love Emily had for her kids, in Emily's ability to teach them and take care of them, and ultimately she had confidence that Emily would raise her children as she would want them to be raised in the love of the Lord. Some may say that Emily's life was not given up in service to God, but in service to the Taylor family. But one only has to look past the end of her life to see the results of it. The China Inland Mission that she helped to establish and gave such stability to in its early days continued to thrive for decades. All the Taylor children that Emily cared for returned to the mission field and spent their entire lives reaching and serving the Chinese people. Some may say that Emily's life was filled with tragedy, with the death of so many family members, having to leave the field after such a short period of time, having a romantic heartbreak, and a shortened life. But Emily didn't feel this way at all. Here are a few of her thoughts on the matter. She wrote in her journal, "It is best to let Jesus plan for us and not plan or even wish for ourselves." She wrote, "It is so blessed to feel that nothing could be for our soul's good which he withholds, however much it may seem to ourselves that it would be so." And she wrote, "It is so blessed standing at the head of two or three paths to shut our eyes and put our hands in his and say, 'Jesus, lead me.'" In January of 2001, I was at a crossroads in my missionary journey. I drove 4 hours south of where I was living in New Zealand to meet a missionary couple that were asking me to consider joining them in their work. They had 5 children at the time and had been there for a few years already. I had all but decided that those who tried to deter me from going to the mission field as a single lady were right, and that after being in Nigeria for 2 years and in New Zealand for 4, that they might have been correct, and it just didn't work for a single lady to try to integrate herself into another missionary family's work. I remember it was a very tearful trip for me. I remember that the missionary wife greeted me with warm smiles and a hug. The children were excited and had sweet notes and some little candies for me. To say I was unsure that this would work would be an understatement, but the missionary wife assured me it was her desire for me to join their family in the work they were doing. Before I made my final decision, I asked them straight out how long they wanted me to work with them. I wanted a number, so I could prepare myself for the time that would inevitably come when they thought it would be better if I moved on. As we sat in their living room, I'll never forget the words they answered, "We want you to come and grow old with us." 2 weeks later, I moved my belongings to Whanganui, New Zealand, and began what would turn out to be the most beautiful friendship, working relationship, and ministry partnership I could have ever imagined. Not only that, the missionary wife welcomed the love that my heart had for her children. The children were free to love me because there was total trust between the missionary wife and myself and a genuine love between us. This missionary family and I worked together for the next 6 years before turning the church over to a national pastor. We then moved to Thailand a few months later to start a new missionary work. We had another 6 wonderful years together until the family returned and the husband became the director of our mission board. Although I stayed behind in Thailand, we still have such a close relationship, and I hold them as some of the dearest people in the world to me. My journals are filled with stories of the children, my kids as I called them. One journal entry from back in 2012 that always brings a smile and a tear is this. "Well, the Bushies left at midnight to fly to America for the next 4 weeks. I don't do well with being left. I much prefer to do the leaving. I went over to their house about an hour before they left to cuddle with Sweet Pea and Pixie Girl." That was their 2 youngest. "As I was putting Alyssa, their 3-year-old, in the van, she gave me a big hug and whispered in my ear, 'I promise not to grow big when I'm in America.' I turned to walk away so as not to cry, and she called me back. When I said, 'What?' she said, 'Come here.' And then she put her little hands on either side of my face and said, 'I want to kiss your nose.' What a precious thing it is to be loved by a child. How blessed am I to have a friend who lets me love on her children and lets them love me back. As our time is short today, let me leave you with this one Bible verse. The beginning of Psalm 68:6 says, 'God setteth the solitary in families.' This is a promise that God has fulfilled daily for this single missionary for well over 2 decades. Whether you have your own family to love on and be loved by or not, God can fulfill this promise for you too. If you are feeling solitary, and this doesn't necessarily mean being single, but maybe feeling lonely or all on your own, ask the Lord to set you in a family. I'd suggest getting plugged into a good church family if you aren't already. Much love and strength can be found in our Christian brothers and sisters. On the flip side, some of you who aren't in a period of solitary at the moment, can I challenge you to ask the Lord to show you who around you is and pray about adopting them into your family and loving on them? I hope and pray that each of you that are listening today has a heart to love others and feels the joy of being loved by others. Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's silhouette and learning a little bit more about Emily Blatchley and this matter of God setting the solitary in families. She truly was a woman of whom it could be said she hath done what she could. Let's you and I go do what we can do.
Silhouettes with Sherry is written and told by missionary Sherry House. To learn more about Sherry, this story, or other stories about women who were used of God, read Sherry's blog at sherryhouse.com. That's SHARI House.com. Silhouettes can be heard at this time every week on this station. Silhouettes is a Causeway Media and Faith Music Radio production.